We're starting a new series this morning. We're starting a series on Jonah. It's a four-week series. I know that the newsletter went out and it said that it was a two-mini-parter, and that even the title of today's message was "When God Is Wreaking on Your Plans." And actually, the title of today's message is "When God's Plans Are Wrecking Mine, Not Wreaking." Although it could go both ways, and really, at the end of the day. And so I have a bunch of questions for you throughout the morning that we're going to go through. Some of them are rhetorical. Don't shout it out, especially when I'm asking about sin. Like, you don't put your hand up and tell me what it is. I mean, if you feel really called to it, well, we could deal with it afterwards. I want to start with this morning. I have this question for you, for those that are here, for those of you who are online as well. Hey, we're super glad that you're with us online. We love the idea that you can join us in one way or another, and we're just so glad that you're part of it. My question for you this morning here is, how many of you here want to hear from God? Like, how many of you? This one you can answer. You can put, because all of a sudden I was like, two of you want to hear from God? That's it, we're done, like two? Because that's not like we're in trouble if that's what we're starting with. You know what, the truth is this, I would say that we all do. Like, we all want to hear from God in our lives. Like, we want to know what his will is for us. We want to know where he's directing us. We want to know what the purpose is that he has for our lives, and how we get to that, and how we meet into his purpose, and how we live into his purpose. We want to understand where we are in our faith journey as he's bringing us along. So we want to understand where God is directing us. I would say most of us, if not all of us, want to know that. We want some surety in that. But what happens a lot of the time... What happens to us a lot of the time is that God is calling us to something, and we don't want to do it. Like, we look at what he's asking us to do, and we're like, oh, yeah. Like, I want to hear your voice, God, but like, I didn't want to hear that thing. Like, I didn't want to hear that you wanted me to do this or let go of this other thing. I didn't want to hear you tell me that I have to go witness to my crabby old neighbor. I didn't want to hear that I have to, you know, give more of my finances. I want to hear from you, God, but I just want to hear, like the super sweet, nice things that you love me and you have grace for me. And all those other things, that's probably for somebody else. So we have all these reasons as to why we don't want to hear some of the things that God calls us to. Sometimes we just don't feel adequate. We don't feel like we're the ones that are equipped. We feel that someone else is being called to that someone else has the gifts and the talents and the abilities to do it. And we look at ourselves and we're like, yeah, I'm not that guy. Like, I'm not the guy that you're calling to come and do this sort of thing. Like, there, even now as we're singing, and I know the countdown's going, and I know this is the last song, and it's going to be my turn to come up here. And then I was so grateful that Simon says, hey, let's sing it one more time. I'm like, thank you, Lord, for just a couple more seconds. And even as I come up, I'm like, oh, why am I the guy that has to come up here? Like, oh, I don't know if I'm the guy. And we come up with all these different reasons as to why, when God's directing us into things, we can't be the one. And let me tell you this, God, like, obedience to God, like, it's not always going to be easy. That's the truth. And I'll be honest with you right from the get-go here this morning. Today's message, there's going to be some hard parts to it. And there's going to be some stuff that you need to think about, and some stuff that you're going to have to step up to in your life. So it's not going to be all love and joy. There's going to be some hard things that you're going to hear this morning, and you're going to have to reflect on. And usually I pass these messages on to Dan, and he has to jump on the grenade of the hard message. And I just didn't plan it out very well this time around. And so you're gonna hear it from me. But obedience to God isn't always easy. But disobedience to God will always have consequences. That's the truth of it. And so this morning, we're starting this new series with Jonah. And we all know the basics of the story of Jonah. Hey, God calls Jonah. Jonah runs away. He gets into a storm. A fish swallows him. The same fish spits him out. He preaches the gospel, and everyone lives happily ever after. Like, we know it, right? Like, and it ends there. Maybe we could just have our snacks and be done. And then that's an early Sunday for us, right? Like, this is the story of Jonah. But here's the thing about the story of Jonah. Like, it's so much more than just a Sunday school lesson. Like, it's a powerful story that has layers and layers and layers. Layers that are going to speak to our everyday lives. The story of Jonah has so much in it that is going to help us to get closer to God. There are moments in the story of Jonah that are going to put us in positions to be used by God for the kingdom. So it's so much more than just that Sunday school lesson that you learned 5 years ago, Doug. Not like 80 years ago. Doug wrote the story of Jonah. You shouldn't have messed with me, Doug. Now I can't help myself. I'm telling myself, don't do it. And the words are just coming out of my mouth. But there are so many layers, because really we want to put ourselves into positions where we can be used for God, for the kingdom. Not for ourselves, but because we're invited into kingdom work. So here's another question I have for you this morning. Who is the main character of the book of Jonah? Who is the main character? It's named after him. It's not Jonah. It's not. And I heard someone yell fish already. Someone was like, it's the fish. It's actually not the fish either. You know, actually, the name of Jonah, like, the only other name that's used in this book is his dad, and it's Amittai. After that, there are no other names mentioned in the four chapters. There's nothing. There's no crewmates named. There's no captain named. There's no king's named. It's Jonah and Amittai and the fish. And you would think then, well, it's got to be the fish. He did some pretty serious work. Like, he did some pretty serious work in the middle of this story. But it's not. It's not Jonah, and it's not the fish. It's God. Like, God is the main character of this story. Let's take a look at Jonah 1:1. And what we're going to do this morning is we're going to go through the whole chapter. We're going to look at almost every single verse as we go along. So try and follow along as we move along with our scriptures. Jonah 1:1, I'm using NIV this time around. I know you guys love it when I preach out of the Message. This time I'm not. The word of the Lord came to Jonah. There he is. The word of the Lord came to Jonah. This is how the story starts. Here is our main character. Oh, is that someone's phone? Please tell me that was someone's phone. I love it. Or was that outside? The word of the Lord came to Jonah. How many of you know this? That the God that we're talking about this morning, the God that we're reading about, the God that Jonah experienced, the God of everything. How many of you know that that God is a God that speaks? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Our God speaks. He spoke then. He speaks today. He'll keep on speaking. And what happened with Jonah was the Word of the Lord came to him. And I believe this. I believe that the Word of the Lord will come to us, to you, and to me, and to us as a body, as a church that's planted here on this street with our neighbors. I believe that the word of the Lord is coming to us to direct our steps. He wants to do that for us as individuals and as a body. And again, we go back to the idea of, Oh, yeah, I hear you, God. It's not really something that I feel I can do. So let's take a look at verse 2, and we'll start with 1 and 2. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Actually, I know a kid named Amittai. You wouldn't think so, but there's someone there named Amittai. It's a great name. And so the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. So what's God doing? He's telling Jonah, hey, like, everybody knows what's happening over there. Like, everybody knows what's happening in Nineveh. And here's what I need you to do, because you are my chosen one. You have the role of the prophet. You have been my voice piece, and I have sent you, and you have gone, and you have spoken on my behalf. I choose you to play this part in the kingdom. And so God is saying to him, here's where I need you to go. You need to go talk to these people, because they're a mess. Like, they're a complete and utter mess, and they're going in the wrong direction. I need you to go there, and I need you to tell them that they need to repent, and they need to turn back to me. And what's Jonah's response? I'll tell you this, it's not that different than what our response would be a lot of the time when we don't like what God's calling us to do. Verse 3, but Jonah ran away from the Lord, and he headed to Tarshish, where he went to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed to Tarshish to flee from the Lord. He ran. That's what he did. He ran away. And he didn't just run away. Like, he went to great lengths to run away. Like, he ran as far as he possibly could from where God was calling him. I want to show you a map. Can we put the map up? So you can see where Joppa is here on our right. And then you see Nineveh just off to the east. That's about 890 kilometers away. So he's in Joppa. God's telling him, hey, go to Nineveh because I want to show these people some grace. It's about 800 kilometers. I need you to go that way. What Jonah does is he goes literally in the opposite direction. He goes all the way to Tarshish. It's over 4,000 kilometers away. Like, when he ran away, he went to great lengths to get away from what God was directing him to do. In that time, like in the time of Jonah, that's as far as you could travel. Like, no one was traveling farther than that. So he literally went as far away as he possibly could to get away from where God was calling him to be. And this part of the story leads us to this principle. If you want to run away from God, the devil is always going to offer you a ride. If you want to get away from God, the devil is waiting, and he will offer you a ride. You can always find the boat that's sailing in the opposite direction. That's not hard to do. So why? This was a question I always had even as a kid. Why would Jonah have run? Like, what? Like, you were the prophet. Like, you were used to going and doing the things that the Lord was directing you to do. So why in this moment did you decide this isn't for me? Well, let me give you some context here. Jonah was a Jewish Hebrew from Israel. And Nineveh was the capital city of Assyria. And they had history. They hated each other. These two nations had zero love for one another. They had a long history of war and conquest, and it was brutal. And the Assyrians, I mean, they were powerful. They were a powerful empire. And they were a war machine. Like, they came into countries and into cities, and they took over, and they were brutal while they did it. So there was no love there from Jonah for the Ninevites, because he carried this history with him. And so you would think, yeah, he doesn't, why would he go there? Like, he hates these people. But the real reason that he doesn't go isn't because he's afraid of how powerful or how brutal they are. The real reason he doesn't want to go is because he knows the character of God. And he knows that God is going to show grace and forgiveness. And Jonah has decided for himself who deserves grace and forgiveness. And he's saying they don't deserve it. And so he starts to rationalize his disobedience. And what does that mean, to rationalize your disobedience? If you're disobedient to where God is calling you to, you are walking into the line of sin. And so what does it mean to rationalize sin? I'm sure he thought to himself, these people are so evil. These people are so far gone. They don't deserve grace. And I'll be honest, and I'll be super transparent with you up here. I've been there before, where God has said to me, hey, these people need to hear my message of grace. And I'd be like, really? These guys? Like, can you see what they're doing? Can you see how far they are from your heart? Like, why would you show them? They're the worst. They might as well be Oilers fans. You're nodding, Corey. Are you a Flames fan? I'm asking you now. We're interacting. I got distracted. Sorry. Canucks? Flames? I'm done. We were going somewhere there. I thought we were connecting, and then all of a sudden let's just get back to business here. Rationalizing sin is this. It's our minds make up an excuse for what our spirit already knows is wrong. And the reality of it is, folks, rationalizing sin is so easy for us. It really is. Maybe today God is asking you to go do something for the kingdom. Maybe he's asking you to serve in some kind of capacity, whether it's in the church body, whether it's in your community, whether it's at work, wherever your circle of influence is, he's asking you to serve in some kind of capacity. Maybe he's asking you to give. Maybe he's asking you to give some of your time or your talents or your finances. Maybe he's asking you to share and witness to someone. Maybe he's asking you to forgive. Oh, that's hard, because we like to hang on to that stuff, right? And so what is our response? We start to rationalize stuff. And we're like, you know what, God, I hear you. I get what you're asking me to do. I'm just not there right now. Like, I don't feel like I'm super ready for it. Like, maybe I should go to Bible school for a couple years and kind of get a hold of all this Bible stuff. Maybe I should be a Christian far longer than, 20 years to be ready to do what you're asking me to do. Like, you know what, God? Like, this isn't the best time right now. Like, I got a lot on my plate. Like, I'm working, and I got my kids, and I'm trying to pay my bills, and I got anxiousness, and there's some depression in the middle of it, and, like, my plate is, like, you can see, God, like, look how much I'm carrying. It's far too much. I get what you're saying. It's just not the right time. Why don't you ask me farther on down the road? I'll do it later. And I'll tell you this. Delayed obedience is still disobedience. Delayed obedience is still disobedience. It's like when you're parenting and you're that parent that counts for your kids. Hey, go clean your room. Or hey, turn off the tablet. Hey, put the phone away. Put the video game. Hey, go empty the dishwasher. And they're not doing it. And you start counting. Like, how many of you here have done the counting with your kids? No one's going to put their hands up. You liars. You're all lying. You've done it. We've done it. My kids, like with my kids, they knew I was serious when I switched languages. Like when I start counting in Spanish, uno, dos, I don't get to tres. Ever. I never did. As soon as I switched to Spanish, they knew, oh, Dad means business today, and we need to get this done. It doesn't work anymore. I mean, Ruby's 11, Judah's 15, Lennon's 8. Lennon's 18. Lennon turned 18 this week, by the way. Super exciting. He's going to start paying rent. I'm super excited about it. Super excited about it. It doesn't work with my kids. There's no way I would ever sit there with Lennon and say, hey, I'm going to count to three. He'd be like, all right, I'll count all the way up to 10. What's happening here? When we do that, when we start that counting thing, what happens is we're actually conditioning our kids to delayed disobedience. Delayed obedience. Delayed obedience is still disobedience. What it is really about, it's about having spiritual maturity. And I know a lot of the times we look at spiritual maturity and we're like, ooh, like that's a heavy label to carry. Like, I don't understand it. Like, I guess I need more Bible knowledge. I guess I need far more time in the pew. I need to have listened to far more messages. Like, I need to know more things. I need to study the scriptures. And you know what? Like, yeah, we do need to do some of those things for sure. We need to be part of the community. We need to be teachable. We need to be able to pick up the scriptures and see for ourselves what the Lord is saying. But it's not just the knowledge, right? Like, we know that. This is obvious. Like, today I'm stating that obvious part of it all. It's not that. It's what you're doing with the knowledge that you've gained. That's part of spiritual maturity. Spiritual maturity is actually this. It's the time between God asking you to do something and you responding to that ask. That's spiritual maturity. The time between God calling you to something and you responding to that call. And so Jonah, he runs away. And do you think his life gets better because he runs away from the word of the Lord? No, his life starts to go downhill. It's super interesting in this book, as I was kind of prepping all this, there's two phrases that you see a lot of, two words that you see a lot of throughout the book of Jonah, and it's two directions that it actually talks about all the time. And it's up, arise, and go, and it's down. And those are two phrases that you'll see throughout the book. And what's happening to Jonah is he's going down. And there's three verses here, 1:3, 1:5, and 2:3. Jonah went down to Joppa, and Jonah goes down to the bottom of the ship, and Jonah is thrown down to the bottom of the sea. What's happening to Jonah is he's going down, down, down. This happens to us. It happens to us when we start to run from God. Our lives start going down and down and down. Verse 4, then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and they cried out to, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. Here's our main character again, right? The Lord sends the great storm. And we see these sailors, like these sailors in our terms today, these sailors we would say are not Christians. Like they're non-believers. They have other stuff that they believe in or stuff they don't believe in at all. And even they are so afraid that they start praying in the middle of it. Like, have you ever been in a place where everyone around you starts praying? Because all of a sudden, everyone's a little bit afraid. Like, we were going, the first time our family went down to Washington, we were coming back up, we're coming out of Port Angeles, and we're on the ferry. And I don't know if you've been to Port Angeles or one of those ferries. They're built a little different than BC ferries. Like, BC ferries, you can hardly tell you're moving. Well, the Blackball It's built a little different. That thing sits super tall, and it doesn't feel like it's stable at all. So we're coming back from Port Angeles, and it's a beautiful day. We've had a great break. It's sunny. It's wonderful. And then about halfway through, the captain comes on, and he says, hey, folks, we're just going to hit a little bit of wind. I'm like, yeah, we're on the ocean. Like, yeah, there's going to be wind. Yeah, so just be ready for that. And the ship, it starts to rock a little bit. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a little bit more than the BC Ferry. And then a little bit more, and then a little bit more. And then I'm like, oh, everybody around you just tenses up. And all of a sudden, everyone's white-knuckling their seats. And all the animals that are on this thing, the dogs, and everything's barking. And all of a sudden, there is fear. And I remember I'm sitting kind of in the middle of it, and I have windows in front of me, and all of a sudden, all I see is sky. And then all I see is ocean. And in my head, I start calculating, how close am I to land, and can I swim there before I die from hypothermia? I am not a good swimmer. Like, I can swim to survive. Judah, he's a swim club kid. He swims 4 kilometers in 2 hours. Like, he's a champ. I'm like, Judah, you're going to have to carry me. He's like, I'm sorry, bro. I'm gone. And it's fear. And you look around, and I know for myself, I'm like, oh, Lord, please settle this storm. Please just, like, this isn't where I want the end of my days to come, because it's going to take a while. The boat will go under. I won't die instantly. Like, I will have time to think about it. And I'm praying. And I know that other people on that boat are praying. Believers and non-believers are going, oh, God, if you're there, maybe stop the wind. And that's these sailors. They're caught up in a storm. And they're caught up in a storm they had nothing to do with. They didn't cause it. They weren't in rebellion. They're just caught up in someone else's consequences. They're caught up in a storm that God has sent because of somebody else. And I want you to think about that for a minute. We got these guys, and they're suffering because they have someone that's rebellious amongst them. Now, some of you, some of us, we may have someone in our life that has significant influence over us. We may have someone that's in our smallest, most important circle of influence. And that person is in rebellion. And we are giving them all kinds of influence over our life. See, anytime that you have a consistent voice in your life that's distracting you from God, you may need to get that person off your boat and out of your circle of influence. We have lots of circles. We have our acquaintances, we have our friends, we have our buddies, and then we have our circle of change. I've taught on this before. You're not getting rid of this person altogether, but you're moving them out of your circle of influence, and you're moving them somewhere else because you still want to be an influence to them. What we need to do is we need to stop following people or things or voices that are distracting us and leading us away from God. And if you're the one that's being disobedient to the word of the Lord in your life, you may be the one that's causing fear and suffering to those around you. You may be bringing the storm to other people's lives. So here's these sailors. They're freaking out. They're scared. They're calling out to every god. They're trying to figure it out. In the middle of the storm, the boat's about to break up. And what's Jonah doing? He's sleeping. He's sleeping through it. His life is going down, 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 and he isn't even aware of it. You know why? Because he's become comfortable in his disobedience. he has become comfortable. He can sleep through the storm. Comfort or being comfortable in compromise is not the place that you want to be. And that's where Jonah finds himself. And there's tons of people out there today that have become comfortable in their compromise. They have become comfortable in their disobedience. All we have to do is take a look at the news. Take a look at world politics nowadays and see how much compromise is happening and how comfortable people are in the compromise that they're in. Take a look at people of influence, people with fortune and fame. They are comfortable in their compromises. CEOs of big companies. Listen, it's big news this week. Like, if you follow the news at all, there's a concert. It's Coldplay. Concerts going on. They're doing Kiss Cam stuff. All the fans, oh, hey, it's me. I'm on the Jumbotron. Oh, life is good. I'm at the Coldplay concert. And then it flips over to a couple, and this guy's got his arms, and they are shocked, and they hide from the camera. And it turns out that they're having an affair. And he's the CEO, and she's the head of the HR department. And then they have other staff, leadership staff from the company in their private booth. Now, this doesn't happen. Like, it's embarrassing. And, they're mortified. Both of these people are married to other people and have families. They have been outed in their affair to the entire world. But this doesn't happen if you haven't become comfortable in the compromises that you're making in your life. Somewhere along the line, these people thought, hey, this is okay. And the people around them who knew this said, hey, this is okay. And meanwhile, over here, you got two families that are caught up in suffering and fear and uncertainty. Because we become comfortable in our compromise. And then it happens in Christian circles. You just have to watch it. You got all kinds of leaders that are running away from what God called them to be. You have leaders that are having affairs. You have leaders that are leaving the church. You have leaders that are mistreating their staff. You have leaders that are wrecking lives. You have leaders that are taking money. Like, they have become comfortable in the compromises that they started making, and they have run away from what God has called them to be. And it happens to us. When we run from God, we become unaware that our life is going down, down, down. But this morning, I got some good news for you. It's not going to feel like good news. I'll be honest. It's not. God will either send or allow some type of consequence to get your attention when you're running from him. And that's good news. I know it doesn't feel like it. You're like, wait a minute, what? Well, I thought, that's not such good news. Yeah. God is going to either send or allow a consequence to the sin in your life. And in this case, for Jonah, God sent the storm. Not because he was cruel, but he did it out of kindness. He did it so that he could show loving grace and bring Jonah back into the purpose of the kingdom. He rescued him from himself. So sometimes in our lives, God is going to send the storm. Sometimes God is going to allow the storm. Sometimes the devil is going to bring that storm. And plenty of times, we're going to bring the storm ourselves. Because sin always has a consequence. It always has a consequence. There's lots of people that do wrong, run away from the call of the Lord, and then they blame the devil. Like, literally every time. that they make the wrong choice. They're like, you know, that devil, he took my job. No, he didn't take your job. You were late every day. You got fired because you were late every day. The devil had nothing to do with it. Oh, the devil, he got me in all this debt. No, you overspent on Amazon Prime days. You pulled out your credit card and you went bonkers and you lived outside of your means, and now you got 100 packages arriving every day. Guess what? The devil didn't do that. You pulled out your credit card. You lived outside of your means. Oh, that devil, he got into my marriage and he destroyed my marriage because he hates marriage. No. Actually, you were super selfish and you took your spouse for granted and you treated them super poorly. And you brought that storm on yourself. You did it to yourself. There's a line from a 90s grunge band. It's, I know, 90s grunge. Some of you did listen to that. Some of you didn't. There's a line from a song and it goes, hey, you do it to yourself. You do, and that's what really hurts. That's where we're at. But in this case, God sends, in his grace, he sends a storm because Jonah doesn't even realize that his life is in danger. Let's go back quickly to the text, verse 8. So they asked him, tell us who's responsible for making all of this trouble for us. What kind of work do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you? See, the sailors have come to realize that it's Jonah's fault that they're in this mess. And so he responds. He says, hey, I'm a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Jonah's response is, "What? Hey, I worship God. Then what are you doing, Jonah? You're right literally in the middle of your disobedience and you're claiming to worship God. Like, what kind of character is that? What are you showing people? Hey, I worship God. Really? Because what we see is you're literally in the middle of disobedience and now we're in this mess. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have with the North American church today. We really do. We say that we worship God. Yay, Jesus! And then we don't do anything that God has called us to do. We're not caring for the widow. We're not caring for the orphans. We're not feeding. We're not loving. We're not caring. We're not doing any of the things that God has called the big church, Big C Church, to do. We're actually so far removed, it's embarrassing. Again, go back to the news and see how easily people wear the label that says Christian. The problem with that label, that it's a Velcro badge, and it just comes off at a tug, at the easiest pull, at the most inconvenient thing, you're like, oh, well, I have to respond like this. But we say that we worship God, and then we don't act like we worship God. So a hard question for you this morning, and one that I want you to reflect on, and it's a tough question to ask from the pulpit, I won't lie. Where in your life are you rationalizing sin and running away from God? And chew on that question. It's a question for me too. Like, I'm not pointing my fingers up here. It's a question that I have to chew on. Where in our life are we rationalizing sin and running away from God? Verse 11 and 12, the sea was getting rougher and rougher. They asked him, what should we do to make the sea calm down for us? Pick me up and throw me into the sea, he replied, and it will be calm. I know that this is my fault, that this great storm has come upon you. So Jonah recognizes this. He recognizes that this storm is his fault. And really, at this point, this is a super heartbreaking moment in the story. Because again, Jonah was God's chosen one. He was the chosen prophet. He was the one that God saw and said, I choose you for this. And he was so far from God at that point that he didn't even care if he lived or he died. That's heartbreaking. So far from God, he didn't even care if he lived or he died. This morning, someone could be here. Someone could be online. Maybe you're watching. And God's chosen you. He's called you to something. The word of the Lord has come to you, and you are running away from him. And now you find yourself stuck in a storm. But you've been doing it for so long, you've become so comfortable in your compromise that you may not care if you live or if you die. And to me, that's heartbreaking. Because when we ignore the word of the Lord, we're going to find ourselves in a place that we never imagined to find ourselves. And again, we're always looking for someone to blame. We're going to blame God. We're going to blame the devil. We're going to blame the Ninevites around us, everyone but ourselves. But we're the ones that have gone our own way. And so Jonah says, I see no way out. Throw me in. And these sailors are like, oh, there's got to be a better way. Like, okay, we don't want to throw you over. Like, that's the wrong thing to do. Maybe we can just, you know, paddle or row faster. There's got to be something. But eventually they see no other way and they throw him in. Verse 15 and 16. They took Jonah and threw him overboard, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. That sea becomes still instantly. And it says here that they feared the Lord. But it's not they were afraid of the Lord. They were in awe of the power of God. Wow. Jonah's God is this big. And so they start making vows right there on the spot. Because any God who can do this is a God that we need. We need to know him and we need to worship him. Any God this powerful is a God that we need to surrender to. And so this morning, if you've been running from the Lord, I want to tell you about the goodness of God. He's our refuge and our strength. He is ever present in times of trouble. His name is a strong tower. We can run to it and be safe. He gives us strength when we're weary. He increases the power of the weak. He is compassionate, and he heals your broken heart, and he delivers us from all fear. The devil, he comes to kill and destroy, but our God sent his son Jesus so that we could have life. And not just life, but life to the full in his purpose. He's a good God. And he's here with you. And he's here for you. And he won't leave you. And he won't forget you. This is the God that I want to know. And the God that I want to worship. He is holy. And so here's Jonah. His life looks like it's over. He's got no life jacket. He's got no dinghy. He's got no rescue. And God steps in. The word of the Lord is coming for you. It may have already done that. So again, in what area of your life are you rationalizing sin? Because you need to acknowledge it, you need to confess it, and then you need to turn away from it. And if you're someone that's never known God this morning, if you turn to Him, you'll find Him. And if you've strayed from God, stop running and turn to Him and you'll find Him. It's time to stop running. God's good. He's worthy of our love and of our worship, and He's worthy of our obedience.